All right, I guess we're not doing the 10-second intro video. We are live. We're actually early this time. Welcome.
Crazy.
Welcome to Flight Plan. Here we are. We are doing an episode today without our leader, Tim. He got caught up in a work conflict despite our schedule here, but we didn't want to leave you guys hanging. So here we are at 4 o'clock. Zach, how you doing today? Welcome.
I'm good. I mean, it's weird. I haven't done one of these pods with Tim since I joined Can't Wait, replacing Connor, and Marissa was still there, and then she left us. Then it's just been me and Tim, and then we brought you in, obviously. What was that? Was that during the season when you started with us?
Or was it after the season? I think it was like right after. I was actually trying to remember that the other day too, and I couldn't
come up with it. It feels like a while now at this point, but I guess we've just done enough episodes. But
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, it's just like time is going a lot slower since you came on, actually. On my day off from Jets, it's just nice and don't have like, I mean, I'm always working on something, but not a lot to do. My Sadiq story came out just in time for me to get him injured. Turns out I'm the cursed one, I guess, since Connor Hughes hasn't been at practice yet. So we'll talk about that. But yeah, I'm doing good. Breathing. We were just talking before the pod how preseason and joint practices start next week. And that's where things get really exciting. And I feel like because of the way training camp is now with like, all the rules they have where you can't have contact for a certain amount of days. You have to have rest days. Like if they've only had two padded practices and it feels like they barely have had none. So this feels like a light training camp, but it's kind of like par for the course now. So I do miss the old days of not necessarily going seven straight days or whatever, but like actual intensity in practice where I don't have to caveat everything I report. But
do you think the people that work for the team miss it too? I feel like there's like, we've gotten to the point now where there was, and I know that you love the NFL the way that I love the NFL. And you go back to like Corey Stringer, which happened when we were pretty young. The Minnesota Vikings player, it was like major, major tragedy. And there were a few other training camp incidents over the years that I think caused this like kind of correction in one direction where we were like, all right, we really need to focus on player safety. But I feel like you hear from a lot of people inside the NFL that they don't necessarily love the new world either, and that maybe it was a bit of an overcorrection. Do you get the sense from people that, you know, the players obviously first and foremost, but other people around the team that maybe there's a middle ground that might be a little bit better?
It's a good question. I think I do wonder with like how little they hit these days. Like it feels to me, and I don't know if there's even any way to prove it, that it's affected like how often players are getting hurt or that they're wearing down before the end of the season. It's a war of it always has been a war of attrition, but like, I mean, the solid training camps were like really, especially like soft in terms of like the way he, like the intensity and the hitting and all that stuff. Like they basically didn't hit, at least towards the end. And then they dealt with as many injuries. And I mean, they also had a lot of old players, which is also a factor, I guess. And a lot of those guys are getting rest days every other day and like all this stuff. But I don't know what the players prefer. I'm sure there's some of them, like the younger ones are probably used to this where they don't go every day. Whereas I feel like the older ones, like DeMario Davis, I'm sure he'd probably, I don't know, maybe because he's older, he wouldn't. But I feel like maybe he misses some of that contact happening earlier. Because like the Jets have been so bad at tackling for so long also. Like that's the biggest, just in terms of like the team that we follow. That feels like the thing that's been impacted the most in terms of like pure football stuff. Like the technique and the fundamentals just like fall apart when you're only tackling like, I don't know, five times throughout an entire training camp, which is over a month. I mean, there's preseason games, but not all the starters play in them. And I don't know what the answer is. And maybe it's playing more guys in the preseason. Like, I don't know. It feels like everybody's running away from the possibility of injuries now, which I get to a degree, but also like you got to toughen up a little bit before the season. And that's just like a product of the sport. So I don't know. How do you feel about all that?
Yeah. Well, I agree. I'm a big proponent of play the players in the preseason for more. Yeah. Like I'm not expecting them to play four quarters, all three games, and especially if they're going to take it down to two games, like you should probably be playing a half each game or maybe play a full game. And then you give the second game off to, and see if the reserves can take you all the way through, people fighting for roster spots and such. So I do think that there's probably a better middle place to get to. And you dropped a Zach nugget kind of there at the beginning that's going to make people go wild, which was that nobody hit in Sala camps. We don't need any more ammo to go after Bob Sala, but there it is leading up to this week one matchup. I think that, like, again, there's probably a middle ground. I don't think it has done anything to reduce the injuries, if anything. And again, I don't know if this is just because we're living in the present day and I'm remembering it and I see Twitter every day, but it feels like there's more injuries in training camp, like more catastrophic injuries in training camp. I mean, the Falcons, between, you know, some legal issues and injuries, they've lost their entire pass rush. Like, that defense is now completely changed for the Falcons. And, like, they're getting bit with it. There's a few other teams that have gotten bit with it already in training camp. And the Jets have so far been lucky, even though we do have some issues with two rookies. Yeah, yeah. I feel like the Jets have been lucky, but I'm a big proponent of kind of getting some more work in the early part of the season to make the later part of the season better. But moving on to the Sadiq thing, which is kind of how we got into this conversation in the first place, I thought that you know, I'll give you your flowers here. I thought this Sadiq article was excellent. Unfortunately, it dropped about a couple hours before we got some pretty bad news about Kenyon Sadiq. I think you and I were on, I don't know, that was probably a month or two ago in minicamp. And I said that those, you know, any injuries in that part of the body, hernias and things like that, they worry me because they tend to recur. They tend to come back. Now there's a report floating out there that it's not catastrophic. I think you've heard a few people say that it's probably not like season ending and we're hoping he's back week one. But there was a piece of your article where you also said that he played most of his last year at Oregon, pretty banged up the entire time as well, and still had some good production. I think, you know, you probably would have expected a top 16 pick at tight end that played at a top flight program like Oregon to have a little bit more production with where he was slotted in the draft, but he had some pretty good production despite being hurt all the year. So I guess, you know, I'm starting to wonder as a fan, like, is this the type of player that just, like, might be banged up fairly often, but can generally play through it? And the way you wrote that article in kind of deep in depth into the person that Sadiq is, seems like he's an animal in the gym. All he cares about is football. He's a robot. Like, this is all he does. And so you'd think that this would be a player that is going to find his way into the lineup one way or another. But what was your take on it just kind of being on the ground there?
Yeah, it's, I mean, the timing is both obviously not ideal for him, but, you know, for me being able to drop the story before this happened is selfishly a good thing, because I've had it before where you work on a story and you're ready to drop it and a guy gets hurt. It makes me think, during training camp in 22, I was working on a feature on Mekhi Becton because he spent that whole offseason saying how he's going to prove everybody wrong and all that stuff. And I had done all these interviews with people who knew him and I was really excited about it. And then he like breaks his kneecap in the first practice or whatever, if you remember. So, that's actually a good segue into what I was going to say, which is generally speaking, Aaron Glenn has been truthful in how he's talked about injuries. Whereas, you know, the previous coach comes out, says Mekhi is going to be fine. And then the next day you find out the kneecap's broken or whatever, and he's out for the year. And Glenn didn't sound concerned. I don't know if he would ever come out and sound concerned. They did sign a tight end today. I'm blanking on the guy's name. He's like an undrafted guy that they had for a tryout in the spring. And I think it is because Sadiq's going to be out for a couple weeks at least. Not like to where they think, okay, he's gone for a while and we need a replacement. This is more like we need somebody to take some reps. Yeah, camp body. So my concern level is more, what, as you said, like the injury itself. I'm not ready to make any sweeping conclusions about, like, is he going to be injury prone his rookie year? I mean, it's not a great start, and he already missed all spring. He's about to miss some valuable time for a guy that I think needs the reps, especially a, you know, unique player playing all over line of scrimmage. You need to know the offense. You need to know all these different positions. Like, it's a tough spot to be in. Same with Pons, who, by the way, I also wrote a profile about in May, and he's also injured. So the Zach curse is a real thing right now, I suppose. So be careful, whoever I write about next. I'm angling to write about somebody, but in terms of Sadiq, like, I think the result of this, like, I would maybe temper expectations for the beginning of the season in terms of what he can do. Like, I think it'd be unfair for him to expect him to come out in week one and, like, just dominate. But I also, like, as you alluded to, like, in the story, like, he is really hard worker. All he cares about is football. He's going to get the work in behind the scenes. He played through injuries last year, as you talked about, the entire season. I think Will Stein told me in 8 of their 14 games, he was hurt, and he still finished with like 600 yards and 8 touchdowns. And that felt like he could have gotten a lot more, like there was a lot left on the bone. So I still feel like we're going to end this season, as long as he can stay healthy, feeling like, okay, they have something here. But I don't know if it'll be as big of a thing in the beginning of the year. And I think you're protected a little bit. Like usually if you use your first round pick on a tight end at number 16, you need that guy to come in day one and contribute right away. The Jets need him for sure, but you do have Mason Taylor in the building who they keep raving about. You do have Jeremy Rucker who you just extended. You have a receiver you drafted in the first round. You have Garrett Wilson coming back. Like they're at least, like they're not going to fall apart because they lost this guy at the very least. So I think there's something to be said about that at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, I think you need him from the standpoint of an offensive chess piece more than you need him in the tight end room. And a chess piece, by definition, is more of a luxury than a need, yeah. Right? Like he, I think, one of his greatest values to the team will be actually helping other people because he's going to draw so much attention because of the physical nature of who he is and the way that he plays. And that is part of why I'm feeling pretty good about Mason Taylor having a pretty good year now, is because Sadiq's going to be drawing so much attention. And to be honest, Sadiq being out like doesn't actually make me feel better about Mason Taylor. Like I'm kind of like the reason I thought Mason Taylor would improve a little bit is because Sadiq's there and the gravitational pull of Sadiq will help him a little bit. So I'd really like him to be back as quickly as possible. From a fan's perspective, I think it's a key to a lot of fans' hearts to be able to play through injury and to be able to go out there banged up and still have a little production. But it is a balancing act. It's a tightrope where at a certain point, if the production starts to fade or not be what you're expecting, I think you get to a point as a fan where you're like, well, hey, man, maybe it would just be better if you sat down for 2 or 3 weeks and we can, you know, get you back full when you're ready. And I don't want to I assume no malpractice in terms of like the coaching staff putting him out there before he was ready. Like, I don't believe that's what happened. I believe that this was just like a recurrence, like stuff happens. Yeah. I can't get there mentally to like the coaches being like, well, we need to show him in training camp. And so it doesn't matter that he's ready. He needs to be out there. Like that does not make sense logically. It doesn't line up at all. And so I do believe that this kind of happened. And I will say it felt at times in the Saleh years, like he was just outright lying about injuries. Like you said, like, hey, like, you know, we're not too concerned about it. And then you find out that imaging was done the previous day. They knew fully what was going on and they just didn't tell you the truth about it. I don't think Aaron Glenn's doing the same thing, but I hope that it does. It's not like a rose colored glasses situation where he's like, he's hoping that Sadiq's back for week one, but we don't know if we have all the evidence that suggests that. And so the only way to find that out is to keep going and we'll see where it lands with these two players. So let's go on to Pons with the, you know, the strained calf, I believe it was like where's that sitting at currently?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still going according to the schedule they thought, I would say. Like in the aftermath of the injury, I didn't get the impression there was any concern either from his side or the team side. Like somebody told me that knows him that at Indiana, he dealt with, I think I said this on the pod last week, at Indiana, he had like a very similar injury and he only missed one game, which would mean he was back within 2 weeks, essentially. Again, though, like the concern with any rookie missing time is that a rookie who needs the reps is missing time. And he's, again, like him and Sadiq are very, like if you're going to pick out of their four rookies, which you would have been the most okay with them missing. Like, I think you would have been more comfortable with Cooper or Bailey missing time than these two guys because Pons is trying to learn multiple. He never really played nickel in college, by the way. And that's one of the spots he's competing at. And he's trying to play outside corner. Like, that's a heavy load for a rookie. Kenyon Sadiq, like you mentioned, all over the line of scrimmage, only really played one season within like a full-time role at Oregon. So like, these are two players that need reps and they're missing them. But I think Pons will be back before Sadiq, if I had to predict, unless there's a setback, of course. And so, you know, we're going to get into the position battles later. And this obviously doesn't help his chances of like playing in week one necessarily, like starting. But, you know, I'm still very high on those two players and their talent. What I will say is like, just talking about this with you now, there's like, is part of like a broader conversation in my head and something I wanted to write about at some point, which is like, if the Jets are going to be better than people expect this year, they need like 5 to 7 specific things to go their way. Like you need the rookies to contribute right away. You need Geno Smith to, number one, stay healthy, and number two, play more like he did in Seattle than Vegas. You need nobody on the offensive line to get hurt. You need DeMario to not fall off a cliff at 37. You need, you know, one of these corners to emerge. Like there's like a handful of things that they, if they are going to win more than 5-6 games, like
Minka,
they
all need, I would to add to that list.
Minka, like, you know, Minka, I keep hesitating to, it's funny you say that, because I was talking to somebody about this a little bit today. What I've learned in training camp is to try not to overhype, like when a guy is playing really well and he looks remarkable, especially if he's an older player, because Tyron Smith is the one I feel like burned me the most, because I just thought he was the best tackle I'd ever seen in camp. Like the technique was remarkable. He looked huge and he's still moving. Then week one comes and you're like, oh, compared to like, you know, other NFL players, he's really old and slow now, actually. And I don't think that'll be the case with Minka. And I still have tried to temper it by being like, he's not going to be the all pro he was in his prime. But anyway, but yeah, so like, this is all part of like, this is a team that is kind of a house of cards here. And if you pull one, it could not fall apart, but like, you know, it might not go the way you want it. And it's very like, Geno's like the big one. If he's either bad or gets hurt, like, you're in a lot of trouble. But like, yeah, like if DeMario or Jimmy and Sherwood get hurt, you're in trouble at linebacker. If any of your starting five offensive linemen get hurt, I'm really concerned. Maybe, I guess, if Josh Myers does, but they don't really have a backup center that you feel good about either. So, this is all part of that, where I think maybe Pons, they were going to work him into a role. I think Sadiq was going to be a key to like unlocking the creativity of this offense. Like I think that's how they viewed him. And if you remove that, then you have less of an ability to be creative. Like you still can, you still have Omar Cooper, intriguing gadget type guy. You can use him as that. You still have Breece Hall who can split out wide. But like outside of that, like Garrett is Garrett. AD Mitchell is purely an outside receiver. Like Mason Taylor is a more traditional tight end. Ruckert's a blocker. Like you don't have a lot of like movable pieces which is why I was so intrigued by Sadiq, especially as I watched him in practice, because he's such a unique player. So we're gonna see how it plays out. Important not to get too concerned, but like between them and, you know, Joe Asai has in practice and Tavondre Sweat has in practice, and those are two key guys I think for that defense, frankly. Honestly, Osai is pretty underrated in that regard. I think we talked about that last week. Kingsley Anagbare, somebody stepped on him on Monday. He missed Tuesday's practice out of precaution. Like it's the injury vibes in terms of like that part aren't great, but it doesn't sound like any of them are significant. You need these guys to get back because these are all new players that I just listed. So like, it's not like any of these guys are return guys or you know what you're getting. Like you need these guys to fit into your defense and offense, which are completely new and with these players they've never played with. So that's like a concern I have, but not one I'm ready to like freak out about just yet.
So I'm going to counterpoint devil's advocate you on a few things here, not to be like overly positive guy, just to provide like the other half of the voice. Right. And like, I'll go in reverse order from the way you laid them out. So number one, the good thing about like some of the, you know, I don't want to say older guys, but some veterans, some NFL veterans missing some time is that it gives guys like Darryl Jackson like an opportunity to show something in camp. And that way you at least know, hey, the veteran's going to come back. We're going to get him into the defensive playbook. Everything's going to be okay there. But we got a pretty good look at this other guy. And so now we feel confident that if we need to move some things around, we can at some point. And so that's been a positive outcome of some of that. As far as like teams needing things to go their way, you're right. Like there's no way to dispute that. You're right. But I think as Jets fans, sometimes we get too nerved up about these things. Like, yeah, of course we need our quarterback to be good. Like if Matt Stafford goes down, the Rams stink too. Right. Yes. So like there's every team needs those things to happen. Every team.
So I should say less the injury part. Cause yeah, you're right. That is an obvious thing. And more like what version of Geno are you getting is probably the bigger question. Yeah,
exactly. I think with the Jets, it's just more of a volume of those things. Like with the Rams, it's like the Rams are pretty good. So like it's Matthew Stafford, like he's the linchpin there. Yeah. Maybe not every team needs 5 to 7 things to break their way. Maybe other teams need 2 to 3 things or one thing. But yeah. And again, just to be a counterpoint here. And I think, again, to go back to the beginning, you said these are the two guys you don't want to miss time. I agree with you. I don't want these guys to miss time. But you kind of digest everything you wrote about Kenyon Sadiq, and you're like, hey, man, I know it's tough for guys to adjust to the NFL, especially at this position, and you definitely do not want anybody to miss time during that transition period. But if a guy's going to miss time, having a guy miss time that's built like Kenyon Sadiq is, both physically and mentally, who you're not worried about taking his eye off the ball, you're not worrying about him going out in New York and like doing weird stuff and like potentially something happening. Like, he's just going to be studying the whole time. He's just going to be looking forward to getting back the whole time. And so you feel good about him kind of staying in the process, even if he can't be on the field. And I think you've heard nothing but good things about Pons also and his mentality. And so I think, again, just to play the devil's advocate, I think hopefully with those two guys, they will stay close. They'll stay in the process and we can get him back before week one, not for week one, but before week one to get him a little bit of reps in before the season starts. So, all right, let's go to stock up, stock down. You are the boots on the ground here. So you want to start with stock up. We'll start with the positive.
Yeah, I'll go with I did an obvious one and then I tried to, so I had a story come out this morning of like eight guys that I think are standing out. So I'm going to try and differentiate it as much as I can while still keeping like a couple guys from that list. But we talked about Minkah a little bit already, so I won't talk about him again. So I'll start with, let's go Jelani Woods. I'll start with Jelani Woods. I think he has, he was kind of like a thing that you guys and us would like joke about because he was like on the roster, but we're like, is everybody sure that he exists? Because he just like, even when he was active, wasn't really playing, it seemed like. But, he's such an interesting, like if you just look at the tools and like the things on paper, like such an intriguing 6'7", like 260. He has a history of being a pretty good blocker. He's a pretty good athlete for that size. Like, and he stood out in the spring, but still you're like, okay, was that just because he's going against, average Joe or whatever or what? But he's like, to your point earlier about guys being injured and other guys getting opportunities, like he is a pretty young guy, but he's not like in the sense you were talking about, but he's getting the reps that he maybe wouldn't have gotten with like Gino, with Cade Klubnik. And like, there was a day the other day, I think Sadiq was out, I believe it was Monday, and Woods had like five targets and caught four of them. And the way Aaron Glenn talks about him, I feel, if I wasn't confident before, I feel pretty confident he's going to make the team now. And a factor I honestly should have weighed a little heavier is that Frank Reich drafted him. Like, he was in Indy when he was drafted. So if anybody like he had the, he had the vision of how he was going to use him, and then injuries just derailed Jelani Woods. Like, I think that's a part maybe people don't realize. He missed two full seasons for two different injuries. I believe one was a turf toe and the other, I can't remember. It might've been like a hamstring. So it wasn't ideal, but last year he got to spend pretty much healing up and learning in the background. He came in late in the season. Aaron Glenn shouted out a specific game where he's like, go watch the Jaguars game. You could see how well he blocked. And so I don't know. He's like,
nobody wants to go back and watch the Jaguars game.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm not doing it. You couldn't pay me to do that if I'm being honest. No disrespect to Jeremy Rucker, who I do think is perfectly fine as a backup tight end, but like Woods has more intriguing traits and a higher ceiling. They both came in the same draft class actually, which, I didn't even think about that before, but, yeah, so he's really helped himself in the spring. Even if you remove that, I think Aaron Glenn is really high on him and Frank Reich is really high on him. Like, he's played pretty well from what we've seen out there, and he'll get a chance in the preseason to go. And if he's healthy, then maybe that's like a second contract guy that you got lucky on that, injuries derailed his first opportunity and now he's going to get another one, and you find yourself a good number two, number three tight end in a room that's already pretty talented and pretty deep on paper. So.
Yeah, and Jelani, it's an interesting thing because you're right, Reich drafted him. He's a Reich guy, but he was here with the Jets before Frank Reich, which is interesting. Like, that's not the reason he's here. True, I think a lot of people might be quick to be like, Reich just brought in one of his guys. But like, no, he was actually here before Reich last year. And Jelani Woods is another interesting case because his like reputation among NFL fans, and I don't want to say casual NFL fans, but like probably NFL fans who play fantasy football.
Yeah.
Outshines what his actual profile is as an NFL player, because he had like a 5-week span 3 years ago where he was top waiver pickup. Everybody needed to go get Jelani Woods. And then he just vanished for a couple years. And so people know who he is. And that probably puts an unnecessary expectation on him to like get back to that as like, hey, like you're a high production guy. Like, when is that going to happen again? And that's just not his NFL profile, but it would be nice to see him rebound a little bit and carve out a role and make the 53.
Yes. Should we go back and forth? Should we do stock down now?
Yeah, let's do that way. Yeah.
All right. Well, I was going to say the two rookies, but we talked about them so much already because they're missing time. So I'm going to lump these two guys together. I said Arian Smith and Tim Patrick. I don't think necessarily that Tim Patrick's going anywhere, but like there was a moment the other day where another reporter was like, has Tim Patrick been practicing? Yeah, he's been practicing, I believe, quite a bit. And that's like he doesn't get the ball. I don't know that he's getting a lot of reps with like Geno necessarily. And I did notice him getting a pretty good block a couple of times. Feels like he's a guy that's going to be inactive on game days for a bit, unless you absolutely need him and just be a veteran locker room guy or something like that. They did give him some guaranteed money, not a lot, a little over $1 million. So you don't necessarily need to keep him, but they don't have a lot of other options in there. And then Arian Smith, if he sticks around, and I think he probably will because they just drafted him in the fourth round last year and he can play on special teams, but I haven't seen him doing enough. He did make one good catch a day after he had a terrible drop on a wide open deep ball from Cade Klubnik. It's funny. I haven't really seen the receivers. It sounds like it wasn't Kaz. I haven't seen any of the receivers outside. I'm going to talk about another guy when we do stock up. Outside of like the main guys, I haven't seen any of these like younger receivers really emerging in my mind that have like done anything remarkable. Although I'll be lying if I said I watched every single rep of the QB3 and QB4. So maybe I missed out on some like Malik McClain big catches or something. But Arian Smith and stock down just by virtue of like all the different receivers they've added and the fact that he still has some drops issues and things like that.
Let me ask you this. I'm going to ask you to put on your general manager hat for a second. If you were a general manager in the NFL and you were managing a NFL roster week to week, and you were in a position where you could keep a wide receiver on the reserves where you know he's there, if you need him on game day, if there's an illness, if there's a sudden injury, something like that, you just need to plug a guy in who's not going to be part of your week to week plans. Would you rather have the veteran who's a pro, who's been around, who you know can suit up on game day and probably give you something, or would you rather bet on the physical skills of a young guy who hasn't proven that he could be an NFL player yet, but has some tantalizing intangibles?
I'd say Tim Patrick would be the answer on that one, the veteran. Yeah.
And I that's agree probably, with you, by the way.
And I think that's the reason why he's here, probably. I mean, that's a good way of framing it, frankly. I am curious how many receivers they keep ultimately, because you know, I think you have four that are for sure locked in. I feel pretty confident still that Patrick will probably make the team. So, you know, you have Garrett Wilson, Omar Cooper, A.D. Mitchell, Isaiah Williams, and Tim Patrick. And so if you're keeping six, he does need to be a special teams guy. If he's staying on the team, that's Arian Smith. Are you going to have Arian Smith active on game day? Like, is that a factor? Would you be able to float him to somebody else to be like, look at the speedy receiver? Like, do you want him? But like, I'd still, if I'm doing a 53, I'll do another one probably after the first preseason game. I would probably have Arian on it right now, just purely out of, you know, we'll see. We'll find out what kind of GM Muji is in terms of like valuing the guys you drafted. I think Joe Douglas fell into that trap a lot, where just because I drafted this guy, I'm going to hold on to him as long as I can. We'll see if that's the case here. The Jets had no problem cutting Malachi Corley last year, though they didn't draft him. So we'll see.
I'll tell you this. For a destination for Arian Smith, Cleveland took on Elijah Moore. Cleveland took on Malachi Corley. Todd Monken is the head coach of Cleveland, and he worked at Georgia with Arian Smith. Seems like a pretty good place for Arian Smith.
God connecting. Look at you. Impressive stuff. All right.
All right. Let's hop back up to some positive with stock up.
Yeah. Since I alluded to it, I'll say Isaiah Williams. I just think he just like does the job. Like even as a receiver, like removing the value he brings as a returner, which is obvious. Like he was the best returner in the NFL last year for my money. He was remarkable. And to be the team MVP when you were cut in the middle of the season is both says about a lot about the state of the team last year, but also like how good he was and that he won that Browns game for them, probably him and Kene Nwangwu. But yeah, like he's just made plays on offense, man. He had a couple deep catches on Tuesday, their fifth practice, one from Geno towards the end of practice and another from Cade Klubnik. And the one from Geno was with Brandon Stevens hanging on to him the entire way like that. And so that was eye opening. And he's pretty locked into me. Like when I came into this offseason, I thought, okay, Tim Patrick probably is your number four receiver. He's backup on the outside, can block. But Isaiah Williams, the coaches really like him. I think he did make some plays as a slot receiver last year. He can be the backup to Omar Cooper. He can be an end around gadget guy. He can be an emergency quarterback if you need it, because he played some quarterback in college, I believe. So I've been really impressed with him, and he's just a great locker room guy. Like, he's one of my favorite podium guys because he's just really thoughtful and interesting. And you know, he's carved out a nice little role in this team. He's you know, I feel like it shouldn't be lost on, like, when we praise Darren Mooji or Aaron Glenn for any specific like personnel stuff. Like, he should be a part of the combo because they did. Aaron Glenn knew him from Detroit. They found him. They stuck with him after cutting him, and they developed him. Like, that's a positive sign for Chris Banjo and this group, I would say.
I agree with you so much about his like likability. Every time he's in front of a microphone, he says something. I don't know if I want to use the word profound, but like every time you're like, oh wow, that was like really insightful from a guy who's like mostly a special teamer, bottom of the depth chart wide receiver. And he's easy to like because his story is good, because he was cut and he was brought over by a previous coach to a new team, and then he was cut again, and then all of a sudden he becomes team MVP. So it's a story you really like to get behind. The danger with a guy like that is that when they go from likable story, little engine that could type deal to person that you're relying on a week-to-week basis, it's, can he make that jump, right? And I think he's kind of getting into that territory where people are going to start to have expectations of Isaiah Williams, because he's put enough on tape both in the return game and in the quick screen game and different things like that, where it's like, well, like, maybe Isaiah Williams is actually a wide receiver that can contribute a meaningful amount of receptions and yards on this team. And so for his sake, like, I'm rooting for him. I hope that he can make that jump into like where it's not a cute story anymore. And now it's just like, oh wow, no, this is a good NFL player. And so I'm happy to hear that he's doing well in camp. Let's flip it back to stock down.
Yeah, actually, you know, I was trying to figure out one that wasn't like an obvious one. And Michael Dunn in our comments actually just mentioned somebody who I didn't even think of. And I think that's a good one, is Malachi Moore. You know, I'll do a tandem down and up, and I'll say Dane Belton on stock up. So you come into this offseason, Andre Sisco, I think they're going to let lose the job, as opposed to like I think it is a competition, but I think it's his job to lose, is how they're approaching it, it seems like. I haven't really noticed Sisco making any plays necessarily. I haven't seen him getting beat badly either. Malachi Moore, I haven't really noticed at all, if I'm being honest. And that's, you know, whereas Dane Belton had a day at a practice the other day where he was in the backfield, it seemed like almost every play that he was out there and would have gotten a couple sacks. And he's a guy who's a playmaker and a sure tackler. Like, he's obviously, if he was like an amazing safety, then he would have had more interest in free agency. So he's not like going to change the defense, but he's the kind of guy they were missing last year. Like, maybe he can be like the best version of what they had with Ashton Davis for a stretch there, where every time Ashton Davis was on the field, he was forcing a turnover. It felt like they got to that point after he went through that stretch where everybody hated him in the Jets fan base. It was like a wild turn of events where it like flipped back the other way. But Malachi Moore was somebody I think had a lot to prove coming into this offseason. And I'll always say, like, we shouldn't overemphasize or overemphasize anything we see or don't see in training camp. The preseason games, I think, will be a bigger thing to pay attention to for a guy like that. Like, can he, will they perform during a game setting? I do know Aaron Glenn really liked him going into last year and coming into this offseason, but yeah, he's been pretty MIA. And, you know, for a safety job that should be pretty open next to Minka, like, it's not ideal for sure.
That Andre Sisco news is stock down, Paul. Like, good God. Good God, we can't. Question I have for you about Malachi Moore. This is a player who played the star position in a Saban defense and eventually Kalen DeBoer as well at Alabama. But like that star position is like, that's a real deal responsibility for a top flight college program that requires a lot of thinking and a lot of ball knowledge and a lot of playmaking. And Malachi Moore played that at Alabama. And there was a clip from one of the, I think the One Jets Drive, like in season series, which I think is called like Flight 25 or whatever they call it, last year, where Aaron Glenn kind of like pulled him off on the sideline and was like, dude, like, you're trying to do 11 different jobs right now, which to me, I called back to him playing that star role. And I was like, he's still living in that where he has to be the whole defense. I just need you to do what I'm asking you to do. And I need you to simplify it and like, just do what your job is at safety. And I wondered to myself if he was struggling with that. And I still wonder if he's struggling with that, but I hope that he can at least get to the right, like mental piece eventually where it's just like, okay, like I just have to worry about playing safety and that's it. Because I do think that there's a lot of mental horsepower there and it would be, it would behoove the team to figure out how to get the most out of that. So sucks to hear, but I hope it can turn around. There's a lot of time in camp left. We'll see.
There sure is.
All right. Let's flip back to stock up.
Yeah. Well, I'll close out. We did talk about him a little earlier, but he's surprised me as much as anybody, which is Darryl Jackson. I came into this just thinking he was going to be a developmental guy that I wouldn't really notice in camp, or he'd be getting all his reps against, you know, the third string center and dominating them. But like he's not only done like well against like Josh Myers and Joe Tippmann and Dylan Parham, but like I think he's playing his way into a rotational job, which is like a best case scenario for a fourth round pick. I think we talked about him a little bit last week, but he's a unique freaking player, man. He's like 6'5" and 320. So he's like really muscular and lean while being really tall. And you see him and he's disruptive in terms of like the way he eats blocks really impressively, which is like a really underrated attribute for like a nose tackle, a defensive tackle type of thing. Like that's what you want. Let those big dudes up front, him, Sweat, Phillips, like and Onyemata, like, let them eat the blockers so David Bailey can feast, so Will McDonald can feast. And if he's this good already for a developmental guy, like the ceiling is pretty high. It is the training camp and all that stuff, and I'll be curious to watch him in the preseason, but I think I underestimated what his role might be as a rookie, I would say. And so that's been a pleasant surprise. And like I said, if you know we're talking to him at the end of the season as a either starter or potential starter, then that's an absolute win for a fourth round pick.
Yeah. So Connor in the summer of 2025, so he does scouting for the upcoming senior class in college before the season actually happens. So in his summer scouting, he had Jackson as a top 70 player, I think, and then had it like a fairly disappointing senior year at Florida State. And that bumped him back into like the 100 range. The Jets took him at 103. This was said on Badlands this past week. And so like if the Jets are viewing this as a player who has that potential in him, and maybe just had for whatever reason at Florida State, it was, you know, I think it was a bad year overall, like, you know, took a step back, like maybe they can try to recapture some of that stuff. And when you view it through that lens, it's potentially really good value where they grabbed him in the fourth round there. So yeah, I think that's a name that's starting to pop up a little bit more often. And it's exciting to hear. Frankly, I haven't gotten my eyes on him yet. I'm hoping that I can get out to practice at some point. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to getting my eyes on him.
Yeah. And then I'll end with a real quick stock down and then we could go to the position battles. I'll say the combo of Zappe and Brady Cook. Like I didn't think Brady Cook was ever actually in the competition, but it did feel like a real QB2 competition in the spring when you saw Zappe getting the QB2 reps. But this feels like they want Cade Klubnik to have the job, and he's going to go out and either show or not show that he deserves it. And then if he doesn't show enough for them to feel good going into the season, then maybe they go and get somebody. But it just seems like they really like Klubnik. They like the prospect of him as their QB2. I think he's been broadly pretty impressive for a fourth round rookie. Like I think he does a pretty good job from what I can tell with my very low football knowledge, that he does a good job of like reading what the defense is showing him and getting rid of the ball quickly to a running back, to a tight end, to a receiver in the flat, which is like not nothing for what we've watched from Jets quarterbacks in recent years. Like I think at the very least, he looks like a guy that could be a game managing quarterback at some point in the NFL. Like I still have been saying best case scenarios, you don't play him at all this year and you're able to just develop him behind the scenes. And maybe he shows enough behind the scenes where you go into next year feeling like he can either be the QB2 for a long time or compete against whatever rookie you bring in or whatever it is. And then the best case scenario in terms of it working out would be him looking really good. If he has to go into games, then you're like, oh, we have a fourth round kid who could be really good. I'm not ready to jump that far, but he's really decisive. He has some good zip on his passes. Like, he doesn't always make the right decision, but he generally does, it seems like. And, you know, his arm strength is very clearly behind Geno Smith. Like, it's, they're on like two different playing fields, I would say. But he's made some really impressive throws, and he hasn't seemed to gotten into a lot of, like, obviously he can't get hit, so it's a little different. But like, I haven't gotten the sense that like pressure has like phased him necessarily. So if that's what you're getting in a long-term number two quarterback, I think you can feel good about that. Anyway, this long way of saying I don't see it being Zappy or Brady Cook.
Yeah, so I think the fear with Jets fans is, you know, the disaster scenario where Geno goes down early in the season. And it, like, you're right. All you're asking of a backup quarterback is, like, can you hold the dam back from completely bursting, which the Jets in past years have not been able to do at backup quarterback. Every time they have to go to plan B, the dam bursts open, everything bursts into flames, and all of a sudden it's chaos. And like, you're so far off the path at that point that it's hard to come back from. And so the bar is, can you just hold it together? Which is a bar that you'd hope Klubnik can clear. And if he were to be asked to do that in week 15, after he's watched the bulk of an NFL season from a sideline, I think most of us at that point would be like, okay, like, let's see what happens here. The problem is that if it happens in week two or week three, and he has not watched a ton of NFL football from the sideline, and we don't know, and like, what's the plan at that point? And so what I think I'd really love to see from Zappy is to be good enough to be the emergency quarterback, where if it happens in week two and Klubnik has to pay a half, fine, but then Zappy's there to maybe like hold the fort for a while and be, you know, a floor NFL guy that can allow Klubnik to keep watching for a little while so that long term he can develop the right way that he needs to develop. Because I'm really not a fan of playing rookie quarterbacks right away, and especially not fourth round rookie quarterbacks right away. And so as long as he gets the time, I'm all in for that plan. So I'd really like to see Zappy kind of get himself to the point where he can be the emergency quarterback. All right. Thank you, Zach. Quickly, before we get on to position battles, we have a few comments asking about Dylan Parham. Connor Rogers did mention something about Olu and Parham's chemistry on the pod this week, but what have you seen from him, if anything? I mean, not being super visible, as was said in the comments here, is probably a good thing from a guard.
I mean, like, I will say broadly, when I've been watching practice, I've been focusing so much on like David Bailey specifically and how he's doing against like Membu or Olu that I haven't like zeroed in on Parham necessarily. But like, one thing I have noticed in general is I think the offensive line as a group has done a really good job in the running game. Like, they've opened up some pretty big holes, especially once pads came on. And it's not like I've seen a lot of like pressure in the interior necessarily, which is a good thing as well. So, you know, take with that what you will. But yeah, I again, as you mentioned, like, not knowing about him is much better than knowing. Like, I think it was 23 where it felt like Rodgers was getting sacked on every play and the fans were getting all mad at us for like overdoing it with that and acting like we were overreacting. And then it turned out the offensive line was a disaster and maybe the reason why Rodgers's leg exploded. So I think the fact that there has been like a decent amount like of pressure broadly, but I think there are some situations where the D line is going to have the advantage in this setting, especially when the pads aren't on and things like that. So I feel like it's been a pretty even battle up front, to be honest with you. So far so good. Like, I'd say if I was going to have a concern on the O line, it'd be him and Josh Myers, and we'll see as the season goes. Like, I think generally speaking, if you have two good tackles, then you're in really good shape. And if you have at least three out of five offensive linemen that are above average to good, if not more, then I think you can survive with like average to below average the other two spots. So if Parham or Josh Myers can even be average, and if you're high on Olu and Tippmann and Membu, then I think you could feel good about this group, I would say.
Yeah. I mentioned this on our pod last week. Like, I'd love to see Inez Cooper be somewhat visible in camp. That way, if Myers goes down, you know Parham has flexibility to bump into center, and Inez Cooper can slide in at guard. And if Parham goes down, then Inez Cooper can just slide in at guard behind him. So really love to see the young guy be that backup swing guy instead of the same options that we've been dealing with for a long time, which is like Xavier Newman, et cetera. Max Mitchell, like that. we've kind of seen enough of those at that point, and so I'd like to see a new body in the mix there. All right, let's slide on to position battles here. What do you got in mind?
Yeah, I can run through them broadly, and then if there's anything you want to react to, we can do it like that. I'd say CB2. I'd say I've flipped now to feel like AZ Thomas is the favorite for that job. I think it's funny. It feels like Aaron Glenn is trying to challenge him because. And this, I think this is a part that maybe, you know, people who react to like clips on Twitter don't think about, but like a lot of this time of the year is reporter, how is X looking? Coach reacting in a positive way. Fans, oh, he's talking really positively about X player. Well, it's because he was asked about him. It's not like he brought him up out of the blue. Whereas he was asked about AZ Thomas in week 1 and he was like, ask me when the pads go on. Like he didn't give an answer. And then the pads come on and like, okay, you said to ask when the pads come on. And he's like, he's been good. He's still shaking off some rust. Like, so like that feels like he's trying to give him some hard coaching. And I kind of like that, to be honest. And I think AZ Thomas can handle it. I think he has the mental fortitude to handle that. I think he had a pretty good practice the other day. I thought he was doing pretty well against Garrett Wilson, which is no small feat. You know, as I think you've talked about, the concern I would have with like having him and Brandon Stevens as your two corners is that like neither of them have a history of forcing turnovers. But you know, if AZ Thomas can shut down his side of the field or something close to that and show the potential that, you know, a lot of people felt like a lot of people were pretty high on him coming out of the draft last year and thought he was, they got really good value on him. I believe CR was one of them. You would know better, but, so yeah, I think I have him winning that one. The kicking battle has been one of the better kicking battles I've covered, actually, I would say. They've both been pretty good, but Jason Sanders slightly better. He's made a couple of 60 yarders. So I'd give him the edge at kicker. Safety, like I said, I think Cisco is probably the starter in week 1 as of now. Like maybe that'll change. Trying to think of the other ones. RB2, I think Braylon has been more noticeable than Isaiah Davis. I still think those two guys are probably both the RB2 ultimately. We already talked about QB2. I think Kiko Maui Noah is the LB3 right now, if I had to predict. And I'm trying to think. I don't think there was anything else that I missed there. Well, and the long snapper battle ended before it really started because they cut that guy after he had a bad snap in practice, which is the one thing you can't have as a long snapper. So they cut him the next day. So I guess they decided, all right, we'll keep Thomas Hennessy around another year.
It's kind of like the whole job. Like that's you have to do that one thing well. All right, I'm going to go in order here. So AZ Thomas, I have a follow-up question for you. Is your gut feeling about him getting the starting job based upon what you're seeing in his play on the field or based upon the spidey sense from the way Aaron Glenn's talking about him and trying to read the tea leaves into his mentality?
I think it's a combo of both those things. I think it's reading the tea leaves. Wright, I think, played pretty well in the spring. I haven't noticed him in a good or bad way, I would say. So he's probably doing his job on that side of the field. Hasn't forced any turnovers, I don't think, in the spring. Both those players are intriguing, and I don't know if a rotation at cornerback is a good thing to have, but like depending on the situation, I don't know if you find a way to use both of them. But like Wright is just intriguing to me, and I haven't watched like a lot of his Bears film to like know exactly what kind of player he is, but I just know he's 6'4" and intercepts the ball, and they don't have a lot of guys like that on this team.
I've heard that Stevens is playing pretty aggressively in practice, which is outside how he normally plays. I was surprised you didn't mention him in stock up, but again, I'm not there. I know. I didn't see it with my own eyes.
The problem I run into with the stock up, stock down thing is that I had this list of 8 players that did well, and I'm doing the stock. It becomes me listing half the roster as part of it. Yeah. But yeah, I think Stevens has been pretty good. Yeah. I still have questions about the cornerback room this season in general, like how they're going to compete against really good receivers and things like that. Like, I don't feel good about Stevens as my number one. I'd feel really good about him as my number two, like he was supposed to be last year. So I still have questions about the group as a whole, but I'd say like right now it feels like those are going to be the two starters.
I also like it feels very Aaron Glennish to be it. Well, let me clarify. It feels very Bill Parcells-ish to be sending messages to a player publicly through the media, because I'm sure it's also happening directly behind the scenes. I'm sure there's very direct communication there.
I don't think Aaron Glenn is somebody that's going to only do it at the podium.
Correct.
Sure. Like, yeah,
correct. So if it's happening at the podium, that means it's happening probably really intensely behind the scenes. And it reminds me of Bill Parcells, and it feels very Aaron Glennish. I'm like enthusiastic to hear that. It sounds like a cool dynamic that like he's really putting a lot into coaching AZ Thomas, which he has the opportunity to do now because he's more involved in the defense. So that's kind of a good output of that. As for the kicker battle, here's my Jets fan abused dog syndrome problem with both of the kickers looking really good is like if one just looked great and just like took the job, you'd feel fine about it, right? If both are good, this is where my brain goes. It's like they pick the wrong one.
One of them goes to the other team and is really good. And yeah.
They pick the wrong one. He shanks one week one. They cut him immediately. The other one's been picked up already. And now you're just in kicker hell again.
The last time they had two kickers that looked good in camp, I would say were Eddie Pinheiro and Greg Zuerlein. And that worked out in the beginning. Zuerlein was really good. Pinheiro was also really good when he went to the Panthers, I believe. Yep. But at least like it worked out where like, okay, at least Greg Zuerlein was really good for us for a year or two or whatever it was.
I never liked the way Zuerlein's kicks looked though. They like knuckled and they would bend weird in the air. I was always, every time he kicked, I was like, oh God. All right. What did you say next? The safety battle, you kind of covered that a good bit already. The linebacker thing. One name I haven't heard from really anybody. You know, somebody just mentioned Kare Vedvik you weren't around yet for that, right? You don't remember that?
No, that I came after that, but I've written enough about the kickers that I like have a pretty good grasp of all the names. So.
Good God. One name I haven't really heard anybody talk about, and I talked about him a bunch last week, was Jamie and Sherwood. Like, is he visible at all? Does he look okay?
Yeah. I haven't noticed him making a lot of mistakes necessarily, and the tight ends have been getting a lot of work. I don't think the tight ends there's been a couple big plays from the tight ends, and I feel like it wasn't him covering them on those. And he deflected a pass that got picked off on Tuesday. So it's been a solid summary. You know, I think it's been interesting and cool with him. Like, he's been very reflective of like the mistakes he made last year. And he talked about how like he felt like he really struggled in pass coverage last year and he was overthinking things. And I think bringing in DeMario and removing a lot of the responsibility off his plate, like in theory should help him just focus on what he's good at. And so, he's kind of an X factor in the defense, honestly. Like, I think everybody's pretty confident that DeMario at the very least is going to be solid. Like maybe he could still be a top 10 linebacker in the NFL at 37 years old. Let's say he's solid. If Jamie and Sherwood's also solid and you have just two good linebackers in the middle of your defense, one in Davis, who's really good against the run. And then in theory, Sherwood using his speed to be good against the pass. Like that's a pretty good linebacker duo. And you could feel pretty good about that group, but like it's pretty dependent on Sherwood because they have nobody that they're developing in the wings to be a longtime starter. So he is an underrated part of this defense, I would say.
Whatever CJ Mosley was providing for Jamie and Sherwood that Quincy Williams obviously could not provide. There's some level of intangible there, obviously. I would imagine that DeMario Davis is going to be able to provide that and then some because he's a little bit more of a vocal leader. CJ Mosley was more of a lead by example guy. DeMario Davis is that plus a vocal leader. And so you would imagine that he's going to be able to fill that void that was left behind by CJ Mosley last year. So I am hopeful about Jamie and Sherwood. As far as the running back battle goes, you know, it's really like you can't have Breece get hurt is what it comes down to. Like you just have to have a good year from Breece because those guys are both fine RB2s. Neither of them you feel super comfortable about taking the load on if Breece isn't there. So, all right, Zach, all good stuff there. Is there anything that you're kind of looking forward to as you get back to it tomorrow at practice and the rest of the week?
I wouldn't say anything specific. I am looking forward to joint practices. I always enjoy, so I'm looking forward to that next week. Todd Bowles and Aaron Glenn are longtime friends. I don't know if you remember this from a couple years ago when the Bucks were in town. Salah like canceled the second practice on the Buccaneers, and the Buccaneers were not happy about that.
And it was because of like rain or something stupid, right?
No, I think Sala just generally didn't like the second day of a joint practice. He was always worried about fights happening. And I can't remember. It was a bit ago, but I remember the Buccaneers organization being pissed off. They almost went to go practice at a high school, but then the NFL was like, no, you can't do that. And so they were mad, but I would say I'm pretty confident Aaron Glenn is not going to be canceling any practices. So, and they're doing two that week, which is always fun. Like I just said, we haven't really had it. There was like one like shoving match that happened in practice, but we really haven't had any fights, probably because it hasn't been humid or hot at all. It's been pretty incredible, actually. So these guys have just been loving each other, but some fights there would be great. Unfortunately, Hassan Reddick's not on the Bucks still, because we would have loved to see him again, I'm sure. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to the joint practices and then getting a read on the preseason game and things like that. I imagine, I'm curious to see how like intense these next two practices are, or next three actually, because they go Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I'm curious what kind of reps they do. They got a decent amount of reps on Tuesday. They've only had two in padded. So I'm curious to see how that goes. And just kind of like David Bailey, we didn't really talk about him that much this one because we talked about him last week. Just keep seeing him as he keeps progressing through camp. As to me, in my mind, they're clear-cut best pass rusher so far, edge rusher. Like, I think he's better than Will McDonald already, frankly. He's been good in the running game. I didn't want to use him as a stock up because it feels like too obvious, but like, so just seeing him doing what he's doing has been a lot of fun. Like, it, I think for a rookie edge rusher to look this good this early against a good offensive line, like, it's exciting.
Awesome. And any idea when we will be back with Tim, hopefully?
Yeah, we'll figure out a day next week. I mean, I would assume, let's see, they have the preseason game Friday, so maybe we'll do Thursday because that'll be an off day and we'll be able to recap the joint practices. But we'll talk about that with Tim. He'll be back on this one. I've been doing some mini episodes both on our YouTube channel, so if you don't subscribe already, do that, and on my Instagram, Zach Blatt NFL. Those have been fun, trying to get on camera a little more. I used to say I have a face for radio, but I keep... My wife keeps telling me I should do more. So,
you're a natural baby. I love it. They're getting better every time.
Although this last one, my wife was making fun of me because you gave me the note, and it is true. Like those videos are better when you're walking. And this, I was in like a weird spot.
I liked it.
I was going in like a circle. Samantha said you were walking in a circle. It was very clear. I'm like, oh damn, I didn't think it would be obvious I was walking in a circle. but she clocked that immediately. So.
Hey, we live and learn, right?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. Pay attention to Zach's Twitter or X, the Everything app, and we'll figure out when we're going to go live next and check out those mini episodes along the way. Thank you very much, and we will see you soon.